Hello, everyone, and welcome to our WNBA pre-draft special. Matthew Collar and Manny Hill here on Raised by Wolves. And if you are surprised that we're doing a pre-draft special, I would suggest that you look around and tell me where other sports things are happening. Oh, they're not. And so Manny Hill and I have always been big WNBA fans. I'm a season ticket holder for the Minnesota Lynx, and Manny often comes to games with me. And so we decided, you know what? This is going to be actually a really exciting WNBA draft. And all of you who are basketball fans, you should at least start to be WNBA fans and start paying attention, because this is sports that's actually happening. So let's go, Manny. Let's talk about the WNBA draft. How are you?
I'm good, man. This is a pretty exciting time, even though, you know, this thing is going to happen differently from anything we've seen before. I mean, it's going to be all virtual, and it's not going to be the big grand where the commissioner goes up and announces the name, and the player goes up and puts the jerseys up, the team that drafted them. And so it's going to be different, but it should still be a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, it definitely will. And it will actually be an interesting test case for how we do drafts and things like that remotely. So I'll be fascinated from that element of it. But a lot of teams' futures are going to change with this draft, because at the very top, it's really interesting. So I will get into the Minnesota Lynx shortly and what their situation is, what might happen on draft night. I still think that trades are possible for the Minnesota Lynx and their circumstances, and a couple of players that they could be interested in. But Manny, we've got to start out with the top of the draft and Sabrina Ionescu. Really unfortunate that she was unable to go to New Orleans and fulfill her destiny as a national champion this year. She is one of the great college players in history. She's about 6 foot tall, 2,000 points, 1,000 rebounds, 1,000 assists, one of the smartest players. She's tough. She can shoot from deep. And at the number one overall pick, there is no question whatsoever that she will be drafted by the New York Liberty. And Manny, I think that she is an immediate franchise-changing player for the New York Liberty. And I wish she had had her moment in the sun in college. But she's one that you mark and say she could very well be a Hall of Famer someday.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look at this particular situation with her and with the New York Liberty, it's almost kind of like a perfect fit, right? I mean, the Liberty are kind of in the middle of sort of hitting the reset button on their franchise. They've got a new coach. They got new ownership last year. Obviously, they're not a very good team. Otherwise, they wouldn't have the number one overall pick. So they've sort of hit the reset button on their franchise across the board. And with Sabrina Ionescu, I mean, there's what better player to start essentially a new franchise with a player like that, who just who's such a winner, and she's a point guard, and she makes everybody around her better. I mean, this is a perfect fit, I think, for the Liberty. It's a no-brainer, obviously, to take the number one overall, and I think the Liberty should do this and not look back.
Now, do you think that the Liberty should trade Tina Charles? Because I was thinking about this, as great as she's been throughout her history there with New York, she is on the other side, and they should be trying, like you said, to fully rebuild this thing. She's one of the biggest stars out there, and it's come to mind to me before that, I mean, imagine if the Lynx were able to acquire Tina Charles and put her next to Sylvia Fowles, then immediately you start thinking that you're going to contend for a championship. If you're the Liberty, you're looking at your roster saying, how young can we possibly get to rebuild around Sabrina Ionescu? And we want her to be the centerpiece, her to be the superstar, along with some of the other players that are young that they've drafted recently, most notably Asia Durr, who is a very dominant college player, and they could have a great backcourt there. But I guess Tina Charles hasn't really been, in the last couple of years, what she was in her prime, and she's now going on a 10-year WNBA player. I wonder if you think that they should try to move her and rebuild that thing completely, or if you want that veteran presence, and if Ionescu is so good that they could compete right away, assuming we have a season.
Yeah, that's a possibility. I just think it, I kind of agree with you, but I think it makes a lot of sense to just really full on HIPAA reset button. I mean, Tina Charles is what, 31, 32 years old. She's been in the league for a long time. She, if I'm not mistaken, she has not won a WNBA championship. So I think as she gets older and gets further into her career, I think that is definitely something that she wants to accomplish. And even though the Liberty are going to be getting a terrific young player to sort of rebuild around, they're probably still a couple of years away from being a serious contender. And I think if you're looking at a player like Tina Charles, it makes all the sense in the world, I think, to move her to a contender, get some value for her while you still can before she really starts to fully decline as a player. Yep. and go from there. I just think it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, the counter argument would be they're going to Brooklyn, and so they're going to move into a new house. It's really exciting for them. They're going to have the top pick, and you don't want to move one of your stars if you're going into a new place that you're trying to attract attention. But I still feel like you said, they're a couple of years away, even with Sabrina Ionescu, who I think does have one of the rare opportunities in WNBA. It's not easy to step right in and be a star, but players of her ilk, you're only cutting from the very top percentage, the Maya Moores, the Elena Deladons, who have had this accomplished of a college career and project so well to the WNBA. So I'm very excited to see what Sabrina Ionescu can do. But there's no question who's at the top of the draft. It's going to be her. Anything else, you would be immediately fired 1,000 times over if you're making that decision for the New York Liberty if you took anyone else. Now, the next couple of picks that are almost guaranteed in terms of who goes 2 and 3, but we don't know which order, are going to be Lauren Cox from Baylor and Satu Sabally from Oregon, a teammate of Sabrina Ionescu's. Now, it would be stunning to me, Manny, if the Dallas Wings did not select Lauren Cox from Baylor, a Texas player, a big, somebody who is rock solid, was great in their championship run. She's a rebounder. She can shoot from outside if you need. She's a tremendous, tremendous passer for a big. And talk about a team in the Dallas Wings that totally needs to revamp its entire roster. They have every other draft pick in this draft, by the way. They've traded and just gathered, I think, 4 or 5 first-round picks. It's crazy. And so they've got Arike Ogunbowale to work around, almost nothing else. And I think that they need to take Lauren Cox in terms of keeping the Texas player home. This is something that we see a lot in the WNBA that we don't in, you know, pretty much any other sport, is saying the local product, if we can keep them here, we should try to do that.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think Lauren Cox makes all the sense for Dallas here. You know, Dallas is sort of, in a way, they've kind of gone the same route as New York. I mean, they sort of made a lot of changes. They acquired a lot of assets. They moved on from Skylar Diggins-Smith. They sent her to Phoenix. That was a huge deal. And you know, Lauren Cox is another one of those players that, a lot like Sabrina, where she's a player that you can really build a franchise around and really have her be a cornerstone. So I definitely think that makes a lot of sense about sort of, like you said, the local angle. Is a perfect fit, and you know, she filled a need for them too. So I think that's if I would be surprised if they go that other route. I mean, I do like Satu Sabally a lot. I told you that a few weeks ago. I'm a big fan of her. She's really, really good. But I think if you're deciding between those two, if you're Dallas, I would think one with a local angle and Lauren Cox makes a lot of sense.
And the difference for me, Manny, is that I only see two players in this draft that I think are sure things, and that's Ionescu and Lauren Cox. That if things don't go perfectly for Lauren Cox, she's probably a borderline all-star player or somebody who's like Rebecca Brunson, that ends up being a great rebounder and a very, very solid player, even if her offensive upside is somewhat limited. But I don't think that it is. I think her offensive upside is very good, and she could even shoot more threes. When she did it at Baylor, she was fairly successful, and she could improve and improve on that as she goes and stretches the floor more in the WNBA. And then her defense is absolutely outstanding, and that's going to give you a high floor, where Satu Sabally, I'm not sure on her defense. You know, Pac-12, the opponents are just not at the same level of what Baylor would be playing. And she is more of a super lanky, like very much stretch four, but I'm not sure if she can, you know, bang down low with some of the best bigs in the WNBA. People don't realize the difference in height between the bigs in the WNBA is crazy different. It's just a different sport from the NBA, where you might have centers right. that are 6'10 and point guards that are 6'6 in the NBA, where in the WNBA, your point guards might be 5'10 and Brittany Griner's 6'9. And so there's a very big difference between that. So if you're 6'4 in Satu Sabali's range, like, you're going to have to stretch the floor because you're probably not scoring the majority of your points inside. And then you always wonder, with all these Oregon players, Manny, how much was Sabrina Ionescu playing into your success? So I love her tools, and I love her athleticism. I love her shot from deep for her size. But if I'm Dallas, I'm letting her go to Indiana, who's picking third, because Indiana needs players with upside. They've got McCowan there, and Sabali would fit right in. I see that going a little differently than some of the mock drafts that are out there. And I think Sabali is a perfect fit for Indiana.
Yeah, I mean, Lauren Cox is a franchise changer. She's the one, I mean, much like I said before, much like Sabrina, where she can step in right away and make an immediate impact on your franchise. I think Satu Sabali, even though I'm a big fan of her, she's more of the type of player that can sort of plug into a team that maybe ascending a little bit faster, and she's not going to be relied on to do as much as a Lauren Cox or Sabrina Ionescu would have to do in order to put that team over the top. So she's really good and she's really talented, and I like her a lot. But I think if you're Dallas and you're looking for that cornerstone type of player, Lauren Cox is the way to go, definitely.
And if Indiana lands Satu Sabali, I will be really interested to see how quickly they become good, because last year they lost Victoria Vivians to an ACL injury, and we saw in the second half of the season Tierra McCowan really emerged, and all of a sudden they're starting to build a pretty deep roster, which, you know, the way to do it is to draft high and get great talents like this. Now, if we skip forward, the Minnesota Lynx are drafting sixth, and so you have the Dream, and then the Wings have another pick, and then the Lynx, because those three are going to be set. I would be stunned if anything else happens other than Ionescu, Cox, and Sabali in some order for 2 and 3. But after that, Manny, that's where it gets interesting, and you see a lot of mock drafts vary here, because you have Kennedy Carter, who is an off-the-dribble type of scorer from Texas A&M, who really carried that team. Some people will criticize her percentages, but she was having to shoot all the time on that team. They'd be scoring 55 points, and she'd have 25 in a given game. Megan Walker coming out of UConn, a great three-point shooter, but not really anything else. And recently, those types of players from UConn have not had a ton of success in the WNBA, like Katie Lou Samuelson, for example. You know, if you're only a one-dimensional player in the WNBA, drafting that person high is kind of questionable in my mind. And then there's another player that I just have circled and stars around it that I think is the perfect fit for the Minnesota Lynx, Manny, and that is Tyasha Harris from South Carolina. I was watching a couple games of her back the other day thinking about doing this show, and she is high intelligence with a good enough shot, but can distribute the basketball. She's got toughness. She has cleverness when it comes to scoring, going to the basket. I mean, all of these sort of things. I'm not saying that she is Lindsey Whalen, because Lindsey Whalen is one of the great players to ever play the game. But if we're talking about what the Minnesota Lynx need that they have not had since Whalen, is that do-it-all point guard who can also shoot good enough. And Harris was 38% for three this year and improved that big in her game. I really like a point guard here for the Minnesota Lynx, Manny.
Yeah, I agree. And it kind of feels like with the Lynx that really ever since Lindsey retired, and even, you know, even going back to towards the end of Lindsey's playing career, it feels like the Lynx have always been sort of searching for Lindsey's heir apparent, the point guard that's going to take over and be the point guard of the future. And, you know, they've had some solid players in those spots, but they haven't really found that pure floor leader that can take, you know, can take command and take charge of the team, a lot like what Lindsey did for so long on those championship teams. And So they've been searching for that, and I think Tyasha Harris fits that mold. I mean, she's not exactly a carbon copy of Lindsey Whalen, but she is that same type of player in that she has a lot of those same intangibles. She has all the leadership qualities, and she can make other people around her better. And I think it's just it's a no-brainer. The Lynx are sitting there at six, and she's there. I mean, this is just sort of the perfect fit for them. I think it's what they've been searching for. I think for a couple of years now, since Lindsey's gotten towards the end of her career and then finally stepped down and retired. So I think Tyasha Harris makes all the sense in the world for the Lynx. And you know, they've got some other players around, you know, to sort of build around that show we've had. And I think, you know, you fill that point guard spot. You allow some of your other players that have been playing the point guard position sort of by committee, allow them to play off the ball a little bit more. I mean, Odyssey Sims is sort of the player that I'm thinking of when I'm talking about that.
100%.
You know, allow her to play off the ball, you know, not have, you know, Odyssey just wants to, she just wants to fill it up. You know, she just wants to score the basketball. And that's good. It's a good quality to have. I think if you take her off the ball, give her more of a pure point guard to play alongside her, it allows Odyssey to sort of be herself a little bit more and be more of a scorer and concentrate on that and be, I think, more of an efficient scorer for them too.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden, if you get a solid point guard who you know is going to control the game and a Dawn Staley-trained point guard, which you got to be mentally tough for that. And I think if you're, you know, pointing to, hey, how does a player translate for how they've been coached in college to how they've been coached in the WNBA? Well, South Carolina runs a half-court type of offense that you would see in the WNBA. The WNBA doesn't shoot quite as many threes as the NBA. They're not 100% obsessed with everything from outside, so they run some half-court offenses that require mid-range shots, drives from point guards into the paint, and things like that that she can execute. But all of a sudden, you have flexibility. Like Odyssey Sims, if you need her to play the point, could play the point. But she can move to the two. Lexi Brown could come off of the bench, or if you want, you can start her at the two and have her take a lot of three-point shots from there, depending on who your opponent might be. Nafisa Collier can move around. If you want a giant lineup, you can have her move to the two. If you get that one player in place, everything changes for you. And then, of course, not to mention that Rachel Banham is now a member of the Lynx too, which makes their lineups also kind of interesting. And I think for this team, Manny, I look at them as a team a bit in transition, but it would be really nice to have that player who you feel like is very solid, smart player, again, a high floor. So even if Tyasha Harris does not become a great player, you still see her as being a very good player. And the same, I felt the same way about Nafisa Collier. If she doesn't become a superstar, she'll be very good. And she's kind of on her way to becoming a superstar. So I think that if you add that piece, I like the direction of where the Lynx are going over the next couple of years.
Let me ask you this. What do you think they should do in regards to Sylvia Fowles? Because are we looking at a similar situation like Tina Charles in New York, where you might want to think about moving on from her just because you're trying to sort of rebuild, you're trying to reset this thing, and, you know, Sylvia Fowles still has some value, you can maybe get something for her? Where are you at on that?
That's a really good question, because I've gone back and forth on this myself. It's very hard to convince me to trade one of the best players in the WNBA. But she's been in the league for 12 years. She is, 34. And
34,
I mean, you're talking about how many years left do you have, but then can you match that up with your trajectory for when these players are going to be really good, the ones that you've started to develop, including Nafisa Collier, and assuming that you draft someone like Tyasha Harris or possibly Crystal Dangerfield, you know, you might see them be really good and really competitive in 2 years. And you're talking about somebody who is in tremendous, tremendous shape and has not shown any signs of falling off. Sylvia Fowles is still an elite post player, still an elite defensive player, an absolute monster when it comes to finishing around the basket. Her numbers were great last year still. So if I thought she was really slowing down, I might say, yeah, go for it. But, you know, the other element, too, is if you were going to trade me Lauren Cox for her, I would have to say yes, just because of the ages of those players, the potential of Lauren Cox. I don't think there's anybody else that I want to do it for, though, in this draft. I don't think you want to just do it for another draft pick, and then I say, oh, okay, great, I can get Ruthie Hebert. Okay, yeah, all right, well, she's got some potential, but she doesn't have superstar MVP potential of Sylvia Fowles. So I think they should just stay with Sylvia Fowles and hope that their timeline matches up with sort of the later part of her career.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those discussions, I think, for, you know, with Michelle or even the rest of the front office. I think it's one of those conversations that can be sort of ongoing as you progress here, because you're not, the Lynx are in an interesting spot that they're not, you know, they're not really in a spot where they're ready to contend right now and win a championship. Now, if Nafisa Collier takes a huge leap this season, and wherever they end up drafting is a huge contributor, and you've got all these other players there and they're really good, then yeah, but it's kind of one of those situations where it can be sort of an ongoing conversation. You see how things sort of play out this season, and depending on where you're at, depending on how the team does, then you can ultimately make that decision. But yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see just which direction they go with her, if they feel like they can get something valuable for her, or you're going to look at it, like you said, and just say, hey, listen, the value from Sylvia Fowles is with her actually being on this team. And that's going to mean more and be more valuable than any draft that we're going to get there.
Right. The fear that you have is getting stuck in the middle, because there are some super teams, and we've forgotten because it's been a while, and there's a worldwide pandemic, which will make you forget about sports, but that this offseason was fascinating. You mentioned Skylar Diggins going to the Phoenix Mercury, and we saw a bunch of other moves that stacks up talent, especially in Connecticut, especially in Los Angeles, where you have those teams that you would bet on for next year far ahead of the Minnesota Lynx at this moment, with the Lynx kind of in that next wave behind with some of the rising teams. But 2 years down the road, and that's what makes it tough for Fowles, is that you're probably looking about 2 years down the road of being a legitimate contender for a championship again, and how good is she going to be at that point? I still think she'll be good enough, and I also think that there's a respect element too, and the way that the Lynx lost Simone Augustus, not that I thought Augustus had a ton left in the tank and was going to make the difference between a championship and not, but you've had Maya Moore leave and not come back for different reasons, but Lindsey Whalen retire. You have Rebecca Brunson is now on the coaching staff, and the last connection to the great teams and somebody who can guide young players, and I think it's much better for young players to win than lose, is Sylvia Fowles. So I would be in a... You would really have to blow me away to get Sylvia Fowles away. Yeah. Now there are a couple other players who are really interesting for the Lynx, Manny. If they decided, and I don't think that this is the case, that Lexi Brown was the point guard. I like her in that position because there are very few players who can shoot 40% from three, and I think if her confidence went up in terms of handling the offense and running everything, that she can play that position. But let's say that it didn't. There's a few other players that really intrigue me, including Ruthie Hebert is one of them, but especially a player from South Carolina, Makia Herbert-Harrigan is really interesting. She's a stretch four. She's like 6'3". She could shoot from outside. And I wonder if you think there's also a couple other players, some that I have not seen. Beatrice Mompremier from Miami. I have not really seen her play, but you know, I wonder if you think that it is a deadlock. Like, let's say even Megan Walker, who's a three-point, like, dead-eye three-point shooter, is there at six. If they should go a different direction than point guard because of the emergence at times of Lexi Brown last year, if they were to trust that, because I don't hate how this roster falls if you get another scorer or even a power forward here to go along with Demiris Dantas or to go along with Nafisa Collier in terms of the backcourt.
Yeah, and I think more than anything, what the Lynx need is, you know, aside from, you know, the obvious spot of point guard if they decide to go with Tyasha Harris, is just more versatility. I mean, the more versatile you are, especially in this league, Carl, the more versatile you are, the more, flexible you're able to be with some of your lineups where you can put, you know, you mentioned, you know, maybe putting a Nafisa Collier at the two on occasions, yeah, for different sports and games. The more versatile you are, that's just going to make you more dangerous and more difficult to beat. It's going to make you a harder matchup for a lot of other teams that you're going up against. So if they can, you know, look at, you know, I don't know, a Beatrice Montaigne or something like that. I don't know a whole lot about her. I didn't see a lot of, Miami Hurricanes women's basketball. I just did not watch a lot of it, but if she is somebody that can step in and play the four and move other players down a spot, I mean, that's just going to make you more dangerous if she ends up being as good as she could potentially be. So I think versatility is another thing that they can look at. If point guard, if they're set with Lexi Brown at point guard, they believe that she can be the one. If you can make yourself more versatile and add more depth to your lineup, it's only going to help you. And I definitely think that's something Cheryl Reeve is going to be looking at here too.
Yeah, no, for sure. And what I was really interested in, and now we'll have to wait to find out, is just how good Cechi Zandilacini can be. She did not play in the WNBA last year, but 2 years ago, you and I saw her show some very interesting potential. And if they believe that she can be a bigger minute player, then I'm absolutely going point guard. But if they don't think that she could be a huge contributor, then maybe I consider a player at that forward position to mix in and out, like you said, with Nafisa Collier for who's the two, who's the three, even who's the four. I also wanted to say that Krista Dangerfield from UConn is in this conversation, and I'm wary of Dangerfield, Manny, not because I don't think she could play. She's a tremendous shooter from outside. But 5'5" in the WNBA is just really hard. I mean, I don't know how many players can we think of in the WNBA that are 5'5". There might be one or two. And as quick as she is and she's strong, that one's really tough because you got to kind of play the odds when it comes to that. And even if she is a baller and she's played for the best, or one of the best programs in the country, I think that she goes a little bit later because of the height. It's kind of like if you're in the NFL and you're drafting somebody who's, I don't know, let's say a wide receiver that's 5'7". That's kind of what it's like. Is, yeah, most of the receivers who get drafted are going to be 6'2" or 6'7", you know, or not 6'7", yeah, but 6'2" or 6'4", somewhere in that range. And you better really believe in somebody if you're taking an undersized player. And I don't think that the Lynx can afford to miss on a draft pick like this. So I like her potential as a 3-point shooter and maybe an off the bench player, but as a franchise type of point guard who dominates the basketball and is a floor general, I like Tyasha Harris better.
Yeah, I think the Lynx are in a position right now where, much like you said, they really cannot afford to swing and miss on this particular pick. I think they've got to get this one right. You've got some good pieces in place already. You got some really nice players in place already. You've got the main rookie of the year, who figures to be a really good player. You can't really miss on this. Otherwise, if they do miss on this pick, they could be looking at a situation where they're going to be climbing uphill for,
yep,
for a few more years here. And they really can't. I don't think they can afford that right now. And I think when you're in that type of position, you've got to, I think, really go with a safer pick. And I'm with you. I like her a lot, but I just, the size, man, it is a bit of a concern. But 3-point shooting is intriguing, and you and I both know, as we've been watching this team in the last couple of years, 3-point shooting has been something that hasn't always been there. So it does make Krista Dangerfield really intriguing from that standpoint. But you know, how much of a matchup liability is she going to be on the defensive end of the floor if she's only 5'5" and she's going to have trouble against bigger guards that are going to be going up against her?
Yep, because Sabrina Ionescu is 6', and she's going to play point guard for the New York Liberty. So that does make it really difficult. Manny, you and I do not get to talk hoops enough. To be honest with you, we never have gotten to talk hoops enough. So I'm really glad that we could connect for this WNBA draft preview. Our plan is to have a live show of some kind. I'm not sure exactly what the plans are yet, but we'll definitely put it out there to do a live show during the WNBA draft. At least I'm going to try to be involved with that. So we'll see how that goes. But I'm glad, Manny, we could get together and do this. And I'm really excited about this draft because I mean, I was already excited, but now we've been in a barren wasteland of sports. So it's like, all right, WNBA draft. And now it's, please, WNBA draft, get here.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, it's really, you know, what, about a week and a half away from it now. It's getting closer. It's slowly but surely getting closer. And I can't wait. It's going to be, this is going to be a big pick for the Lynx. And it really, you know, depending on how they do with it, it could really swing the pendulum one way or another on the future of the franchise. If they hit on it, it could mean that they're not going to be very, very far removed from a lot of the glory days that we saw for the last decade.
Yeah.
So if they miss, I mean, it could be tough sledding for them going forward. So it's going to be really interesting to see where they go with it.
And quick PSA, everyone stay inside so we can get Lynx basketball and Twins baseball and everything else back and flatten the curve. Please do that because it's a great summer in Minnesota when we have sports with the Lynx and the Twins downtown. So make sure that you do that. Manny, thanks for your time. And thank you all for listening to this WNBA draft preview, a Raised by Wolves first time ever. And I'm happy where we were involved. So we'll catch you next time here on Score North.